This is the IBJ podcast for the week of August 20th, 2018. I'm Mason King. For each of the last 5 years, lawmakers in the Indiana legislature have filed bills for the creation of anti-bias or hate crimes legislation. Each bill usually is a bit different from the last, but in essence, what such legislation would do is allow judges, when sentencing, to take into account whether a crime was motivated by bias. And we typically mean bias in terms of race or religion or color, sex, disability, or sexual orientation. Each year, the bills have failed to gain traction. Indiana currently is one of 5 states without a hate crimes law on its books. Now, another push is expected this next session, and some powerful members of Indiana's business community have decided to get behind the effort in a very public and vocal way. 9 top executives from such big employers as Eli Lilly and Company, Cummins, Anthem, and Salesforce co-signed an op-ed published in the Indianapolis Star on August 2nd, stating both a moral and business case for hate crimes legislation. And the issue has taken on some extra resonance in recent weeks after a synagogue in Carmel was vandalized with Nazi symbols. Now, members of the business community plan to keep up the pressure, but their end goal really will have to be convincing state legislators, very likely on a one-to-one basis, that supporting hate crimes legislation is in the best interest of the state, their constituents, and their careers as politicians. So I asked 2 people who co-signed the op-ed piece to do a role-playing exercise. We would have a conversation where I would play a skeptical legislator and bring up the arguments that we typically hear against hate crimes legislation. They would try to convince me to change my mind. Now, 2 of these points of opposition are worth mentioning up front. The first is that Indiana law already allows judges to enhance a criminal sentence based on motivation when there's evidence of bias. Now, the difference with past proposed hate crimes legislation is that it would codify that ability in a more specific way and identify specific protected classes of people. Now, the second point of opposition concerns one of those potential classes, people with non-traditional gender identities, including transgender people, was one of the sticking points with legislators last year. My 2 interview subjects are Ann Mertlow, who is the president and CEO of United Way of Central Indiana, and Jeff Smullian, who is chairman and CEO of MS Communications. My deep thanks to both of them for being game for this. We will start with a few basic questions and then get into the role playing, and we will start with Ann Mertlow.
Yeah.
Now, why is this a concern of the United Way?
Well, because we are the United Way. Just think about our name for a minute. I mean, we really believe deeply that the strength of communities comes from the strength of its members, and that communities that embrace, respect, and marshal the resources of all the people in those communities are going to be the strongest. I find that our situation right now on hate crimes is inconsistent with who we are, mm-hmm. and it's hurting us.
Are you also primarily concerned as a employer?
This is a big impediment right now for economic development, which is why so many corporations are worried about it, but it's also why we're worried about it, United Way. I mean, we serve populations that have to have opportunity in order to thrive. Anything that we do that is an impediment to economic development not only weakens our existing businesses, but keeps us from being attractive to new businesses.
What is it you want a hate crimes bill to do? I mean, what is its purpose?
It needs to protect everyone. And if it doesn't protect everyone, then it really doesn't protect anyone. And that's the simple fact. We are one of 5 states now, only 5 out of 50, that doesn't have a comprehensive hate crimes bill. That is a bad differentiator for our state right now, mm-hmm. at a time when we are being so creative in some other ways to attract economic development, to attract talent.
Is this letter enough, or is the business community going to have to do more?
The letter's a start.
Yeah.
I think it's not the beginning, because we have been vocal about these issues in the past. Sometimes these things do take some time, but it really is time. We need to get this done in this session.
In the end, I mean, regardless of whether or not you have the right moral argument or the right business argument, practically what has to happen to pass this legislation is you have to convince the legislators that this is in the state's best interest, it's in their constituents' best interest, it's in their best interest as politicians. I will be the recalcitrant legislator. You will play the role of Ann Mertlow. You're coming to visit me in my office at the State House. So I'll start. Ann, it's terrific to see you. I just want to say I love the work that you do and your organization does. You're an incredible asset to the community. Now, what can I do for you?
Well, let me share with you some perspectives that I have on hate crimes legislation, an issue that will be prominent in this upcoming legislative session. We are in a war for talent right now. Boomers are turning over. Lots of people are retiring. We are now looking to recruit a generation of people who are making decisions based on not just professional factors and opportunity, but social factors as well. And this has become a big issue. For example, amongst young people, young professionals, social justice issues are their number one issue. And they're voting with their feet. As a member of the United Way family, I would say we feel deeply that diversity and inclusion are critical to keeping communities strong. We believe that it should be part of our fiber. We believe it should be part of the community's fiber. And that it's not just about diversity, it's actually about inclusion. Because without inclusion, diversity means very little.
Now, why is this really needed? My, you know, what my understanding from my staff is that, you know, judges already can factor in a criminal's motivation during sentencing, and that can include bias. Why would we need this added layer?
Legislation is just not strong enough. And it's because it is not inclusive enough. It really does need to include everyone.
But if you take like a crime like the vandalism at the synagogue, vandalism is a crime. And if we capture people or, you know, that committed that crime, the judge certainly has the ability to factor in the bias. That seems like it covers what we want it to do.
We'd like it to be stronger. I mean, we really think that the judge needs to be able to consider the motive behind this. I don't really understand what the issue is. If we mean to protect everyone, which is what we say we do, what is the issue with putting a piece of legislation out there that would be recognized by the rest of the country as protective of everyone?
I get, you know, calls from constituents saying, well, what you're actually doing is you're giving special protections to some people and not to others. And that's just unfair.
Don't believe that's true. Don't believe that's what we're asking for, and don't believe that that's true. I mean, the fact that we get hung up over the inclusion of certain specific populations suggests to me that that is not true.
Well, let me tell you what I see and what I hear. Our economic development folks are telling me all the time that Indiana is considered one of the best states in the country to do business, if not the best state. I mean, we're attracting all kinds of companies and all kinds of jobs. I mean, it sounds like we're doing a great job of attracting businesses. Where's the harm there?
We can only attract the businesses if we can attract the employees. And we are in a place where we are actually struggling to actually fill the jobs that we would like to have here in Indiana. We are struggling. So we need to be able not only to develop that talent internally, but also to attract that talent from elsewhere.
Part of what I heard and what you told me before was sounded to me like you're saying everybody else does it, so let's just do it.
I'm not that kind of follower, personally. You know, I don't believe in doing something if it's not the right thing to do. I do believe this is the right thing to do. I also don't, you know, while I don't think we always need to be the first, I don't think we always have to be the last.
I have to say, I'm very sympathetic, to what you're trying to do. There might be a couple of sticking points. I mean, because people you want to protect are all my constituents. But I have to say that, you know, some of the folks in my district don't know a lot of transgender people. You know, I think they find it kind of weird. They just don't understand it. They think it's kind of unnatural. And I don't think that they're interested in including them in a hate crimes bill. They maybe see that as more of a personal choice. Is there a way that we can leave them out? You know, I'm pretty confident I could support this without the transgendered people in it.
So I would go back to the comment, you know, if we think we have protections for everyone, why would we exclude anyone? It really does mean we don't have protections for everyone. So we are carving out, in your case, a segment of the population. And that's not sufficient protection.
Well, thanks for stopping by. And that's great. Let me think about it, and I'll talk to some of those recruiters.
Absolutely. And we'll get back to you. Let us know if there's anything we can do, and I'll be checking back in with you.
This is Mason. I'm back in the IBJ podcast studio after the interview with Ann Mertlow. We're going to go ahead now with the interview with Jeff Smullyan, again, the chairman and CEO of MS Communications. So, Jeff. So you signed an op-ed that ran in the Star
right.
on August the 2nd that called on Indiana legislators to pass a hate crimes bill.
Correct.
Let me ask you first, what is the concern of MS Communications with having a hate crimes bill?
Well, two things. Number one, a hate crimes bill, in my mind, is the right thing to do. I think it's the reason why 45 legislatures have done it. I think it calls to attention the need to have additional penalties when you have crimes of this type. The second thing is, from an economic standpoint, I think it's very, very important. And I think that's the argument that people don't realize. It's very important to create the kind of economic climate we need here to compete really with the rest of the United States and, in many cases, the rest of the world.
So let's go right into our exercise.
Sure.
Where we're going to do some role playing. I'm going to be the recalcitrant legislator.
Okay.
You are going to play the role of Jeff Smullyan. Okay, so here we go. All right.
Okay.
Jeff. How you doing?
Good. Very good.
It's great to see you. How's business?
Business is pretty good. Really is.
Great. Now, what can I do for you?
Well, I'm here because I think it's very important for Indiana to pass hate crimes legislation. 45 other states have done it, and I think it's critical to our economic future. I also happen to think it's the right thing to do. I think we have to show that this is not a place where hate exists. But from an economic standpoint, I'm representing the business community, or at least my company. We really need to attract the very best people we can. And we cannot show people that this is not a welcoming place.
Yeah, so the business case for this, as I understand it, is it sends the wrong message.
Right.
To people who might be interested in coming to Indiana.
Correct.
Do we have any evidence that that's the case?
We have evidence every day. We know that we compete with other companies in other cities and other states and other countries. And Indianapolis has always, and Indiana, has always had a little bit of a challenge in terms of being competitive, only because we don't have mountains, we don't have oceans, we're not in the Sun Belt where you naturally get people who want to come to warmer weather. We have to do everything we can to provide the most competitive environment. And clearly, I think the thing that's most important to realize is, especially the worker of the future, which may be more tech savvy, they really look at the world, I think, differently. We've seen all sorts of studies on this, that they look at the world differently. They don't look at Indiana the way we may have looked at Indiana 50 years ago, where we said, yeah, we're different. We don't subscribe to things that they do in other places. In a global economy, and we're in one, we have to compete for those workers.
Mm-hmm. Now, you have operations in several places around the United States.
Yes.
Do you still have stations in New York?
Yes, we do.
Okay.
Our biggest stations are in New York City.
Okay. So your employees, you know, might be interested in moving from one place to the other. Have you ever had a situation where an employee said, you know, I do not want to go to Indiana?
Because I've had it a lot. We've even made accommodations for people where we let them live in other places because we felt their job was essential and they could get on airplanes. I live here. I think this is the greatest place in the United States to live. This is my home. I'm very proud of it. But I have roots here. And when you want to attract somebody who doesn't have roots here and doesn't know it, they look at things like, you know, how welcoming the community is. And when we see things, you know, like some of the religious discrimination, some of the discrimination against people with different sexual orientation, that's duly noted. And it's, you know, is it the only decision? No. But it's certainly on a checklist where people say, you know what, I got the chance for a similar job in a place which I think will be more welcoming to my lifestyle.
Yeah. And I understand that. But, you know, I look at our downtown.
Yeah.
And, you know, our tallest building is named after a a tech firm based in San Francisco.
That's a great example.
Yeah, they have at least 1,000 people here, and right. It seems to be good enough for them.
Well,
they bother by it.
I'm glad you raised that point, because Salesforce, if you remember, was a vigorous opponent of RFRA. And they basically said, we're not going to make a headquarters here unless you modify RFRA. Hmm. We did, and they did. They have been a very strong advocate of making sure that Indiana is a welcoming place. That's why they have been as aggressive as anyone in promoting this idea. Salesforce came because we changed some things here. The next Salesforce, we've got to be prepared to understand them.
You know, something that my staff tells me about the hate crimes legislation is that it's really not needed. That
right.
Judges have the ability, based on their knowledge of the case, if they believe that there is bias involved, to assess whatever penalties they think are appropriate.
I think that's right. I also think that they're, having the legislation and specifying it makes it easier for those judges. And beyond that, if it's not needed, why did 45 other states think it was needed?
Another thing that I hear from constituents who comment on this is that I feel like, taking basically protected classes and putting them into the mm-hmm. into the law is unfair. It's not a fair way to do it. To make penalties worse if you commit crimes against a certain victim.
Do you think that's right? Well, historically, you've had more crimes committed against certain classes. You were really leveling the playing field because those are the people who've had the discrimination. So it's not like saying they're special cases. It's we are focusing on those people because they've been the victims of this kind of discrimination. And if you look like everybody else and you pray like everybody else, the odds are that you're not going to be a victim. But when you're in a minority, those are the people who become victims.
I'm glad you brought that up. Because I wanted to ask you about the vandalism at the synagogue up in
right.
Carmel,
right, right.
Where somebody had painted swastikas and,
right.
and Nazi symbols
right.
Near the synagogue. I'm curious, just as a Jewish person,
right.
How does that make you feel when you see something like that?
Well, it's disheartening. I've been very fortunate. My family's been here for 130 years. They came here. They came to this country to escape the persecution of other places. And this has been a remarkable home for them and for them and for the generations that followed them. America has lived up to the promise of an opportunity, of a land of opportunity, where you can believe what you want, where you can do the things you want. I couldn't be prouder of that. And when you see those kind of things, it harkens back to the places that they left mm-hmm. and the reasons they left.
Do you think that having a hate crimes bill on the books would have prevented that from happening?
Well, I don't know if you ever prevent it from happening. Maybe it deters people. I think my sense is there's some deterrence. It's certainly not going to make it worse. It's not going to make it more likely by having it on the books. I don't know anything about the young man who was just arrested. But I think if he understands that in this day in Indiana that this behavior is not tolerated, it may have delivered a message to him where the next person is thinking about it. Not only is it, not accepted, but we feel very strongly that this behavior is not tolerated.
Thank you so much.
My pleasure. My pleasure, Mason. It's been fun. Thank you.
My thanks again to Ann Mertlow and Jeff Smolian. That was pretty interesting. I don't think this is the last time that we're going to try to do role-playing on the podcast. You can read a lot more about the prospects for hate crimes legislation in this week's print edition of IBJ. Lindsay Arditi looks more closely at the recent attempts to pass a bill and how having Governor Eric Holcomb on board as a vocal proponent in the next session could make a difference. And, of course, you can check it out on IBJ.com with the rest of this week's top stories. And, hey, thanks for dropping in on the podcast. I'm Mason King, and we'll be back again next week.